C1A. Number 7B.
If I do that, that brings me receipt from the human. And so I have the pangs of the human. And so I come to life, which says, are you valuing the human life and the mortal life and the world's life more than the divine life? Are you atoned with the divine life or with the human life? And so every pang of repentance and suffering will help me to stick more every good thought to every good deed, and that helps me on. And then I have the practical repentance. Then I have the practical showing forth of my unity with God. And that, she says as truth, that makes me at one with God. Then I have the at one man with God. And man does the will of wisdom. And so, finally, I find my part in God. I see that I have played my part in the plan of God. Can you see that? How it goes step by step. Well, if you can't see, it doesn't matter. You think it over. Think it over. But it is quite true that if you know what's happening in the world. You never know when the world is blowing up. You never know if they let go of those age bombs. Well, who gives us the certainty that they don't let them go off? Humanly, we have no certainty. Knowing the human mind and mortal mind, we know that it should go off. Because the mortal mind wants to go it off. Mortal mind always wants to kill. Mortal mind always wants to make misery. Well then, what do we have then really to worry about? What then is our big job? To find spiritual. Our purpose of life really shouldn't be to have here a little comfort and there a little comfort and there a little bit enjoying and using Christian Science to have there a little bit more enjoying and there a little bit more comfort. That's all right, but it doesn't really matter to anything. We have to work out being. We have to see being, life, which is spiritual, which no age bomb can blow up. And I feel that only if we see that we can help crime in check, not the other way around. Not by being interested in our little things of the daily life, in being here and there a little bit troubled of our own human life. That doesn't do much. Let's be big about this thing. And to be big about it means that we really put something into the balance. And how can we put something into the balance? Atonement says, mind is the divine mind, and that divine mind impels us to let go of the littleness of mind, of the smallness of mind, of the finiteness of mind, of the egotism of the mind, of the little comfort of the human mind, to let that go, and to look out for the divine mind. But here, she says, how can we take part in that one God? How is our mind one with the Christ mind? And she shows the way through the 7 days. And therefore it is worthwhile sitting down every day, hour, 2 hour, whatever you have, and think it out. I can tell you a little bit, and I can talk about it a little bit as I see it, but that never will do much. That will never do much. I don't believe that one can teach this thing. I just don't believe it anymore. I think, if one could do it, I wouldn't be the person to do it. I certainly couldn't do it. I wouldn't have the caliber to do it. All I can do and what I'm here is to share with you to see that the textbook gives us a wonderful, definite, exact way how each one of us can teach himself. Can teach himself in life and in truth and in love. That's all I can do. And if I can only awaken the love for the subject, the insight that there is a wonderful answer in the textbook, then I have done what I can do. I don't think I can do more. I don't believe that if I would talk for hours about the same subject, I could convey more than what I do. But if I can show you that there is an ordered way, and that we cannot sidestep that ordered way, and that ordered way is so natural and so practical for everyone, and everyone goes home and says, by golly, I shouldn't say by golly, huh? say, I want to find it myself. And then he begins to pray, you see. The moment he says, I want to find out that by myself, he touches prayer. The thought in ourselves touches prayer at the point of mind, of seeking the answer, seeking God. And then we don't have to trouble anymore about that student. But Christ will take him along. He'll never let go. Take him along. So if I try to show that there is a sequence in it, it is to show that if we don't see the sequence, we are at loss of beginning a try, a right. But if we don't see the sequence, we may start anywhere and don't have the right basis. For instance, if you start here at mind, say, mindless principle, Jesus forbore not to speak the whole truth, declaring precisely what would destroy, even if it says half of the variance. But if we would start here, Scorpius would be cruel, because all what you would have is setting household experience and seeing a lot of trouble around about you and feeling I have done something wrong. You see? But if that is the outcome of the three preceding stages of acting boldly against the accredited sense, acting boldly against mortal mind, then second of reaching out for the higher, for true, for God, and let that govern us and control us, the third, then we can be sure that whatever this principle works in the human is all right. We don't have to worry about it, and we are not worried if it sets out all the variance for the moment. Can you see that? That's quite a different proposition than to start with that and say, well, Mrs. Eddy says if I do this, it sets out all the variance, but where are you? You feel troubled about it. You feel jolly well troubled about it. You feel, I'm not a good Christian. All what I have done is all wrong. And yet you may have done the most beautiful thing. But knowing the order, you are secure. You are definite about it. You are certain about it. And you just see things through until they are through, until they reach the point of truth and love where you always get the solution. You just stick it through. And that's why you have afterwards life. You have to stick it through hell or high water, you see. And then the clouds open and the sunshine comes in and then truth is seen and we feel embosomed in love. Well, there are so many things I want to tell you about this subject. I think the main thing is I have pointed out the correlation of prayer and atonement in this first step. See, it's the same. If we know our fundamentals, it becomes very clear. What are our fundamentals? First day of creation. First day of creation says, let there be light. What happens? Can we have that statement without that something happens? No. If there is light breaking on our thoughts, it does something. Namely, it does wipe away darkness. You see, it has a Christ. It does bring us out of Egypt. That's our first statement in the commandments. You know perhaps that the commandments just show the world in its Christ touch. See, therefore we can never have the first day of creation, the word of the world, to have light without that which brings us out of Egypt, out of darkness, into the holy land, into the promised land. See the Christ. In the commandments, the Christ is shown working through the world. And so brings us out of darkness, out of bondage, out of a false unity, of being bound to something wrong. You see the atonement? Can you see that? That the word always brings with it at once the Christ. The moment I have seen anything right in the word, properly seen it, the Christ begins to operate. The moment I see, let there be light, well then, I let go of the false sense. I let go. And it frees me. It binds me more and more to the definiteness of the light of the divine mind. And I have the Eucharist of letting go, of sacrificing my false sense of being bound to any other mind. To an egotistic mind, to the world's mind, or to whatever it is, to Egypt. Brings me out of Egypt. Can you see that? The connection. Well, the same is here, you see, we have seen the same, that seeking in prayer, seeking truly with all our heart, with all our yearning, with all our mind, with all our love, seeking the one mind, cannot just always be that seeking. It has in itself the power of the Christ. That word has in itself the power of the Christ. That's why the word of the Christ. In itself the power of the Christ which says, and that breaks down my fault. Bondage with my own mind, with my own sense of mind. And it binds me stronger and stronger to the divine mind. That's the atonement view. Now, we come to the second subject, which depicts spirit in its sense of the word as the word, of sense of the word as the Christ. Namely, we get here the sense that spirit demands that we purify our thoughts, that spiritualize by choosing right, by turning away from a material sense of things and turning toward spiritual sense of things, by putting first things first, really. Now, how do we get at that point? How do we arrive? You see, I like to epitomize things, but at the moment I give the epitome, I always am not content with myself, because I feel I have just given something which is out of its context, which is out of relationship. So I always want to put everything back into relationship. The second subject must be in relationship to the first. First said, postulated the law of atonement. Postulate the law how to be at one mind, at one moment, how to be at partaking with the one mind. Show therefore that in all that the law which brings us to this oneness in mind by letting go all the faults, our own sense of it. Now the question is this, let's come to the second, is this now our whole God, our only God? Is this now the thing to which we devote ourselves entirely, or have we besides that something else? Have we other gods besides it? Have we other motives besides that? Have we other aims besides that? Have we another goal besides that? Have we other affection besides that? You see, now comes always in the second, quite naturally, always comes the decision. First in mind, we always have the drive, presentation of the drive to what is right, and then comes the decision and says, well, is that your only, or just a part? Is that your only? Can you touch get the touch of spirit? See? And so the second subject speaks all about the question, is now this atonement, this atonement with God, our only affection and God? Or do we have besides that another affection, other God, other motives? This is a great decision. Naturally, behind the whole second subject always stands the whole of spirit, that God is spirit. And that God is spirit is not just a statement, it's an enormous fact, a living fact. And that living fact translates itself always to us, but how? It translated itself in the first chapter as nurturing in us the love for the good, the love for spiritual qualities, the gratitude for spiritual being. Here in this chapter, that spirit translates itself and says to these spiritual qualities, and they must be your only love, your only. You not get now the onlyness of it. See, we didn't get that in prayer. In prayer, it was just a presentation and said, do worship God. How do you worship God? By loving the qualities of God, and so on. But it didn't say that must be the only. But you know very well that if one has that sense of prayer in us, where we say, oh, the spiritual really is only, is one, that's God, and God is spiritual. And then little by little comes tone in it and says, well, then why should I worship other gods? Why should I run after other things? And so the Christ comes and speaks to us and says, turn away from the other. Turn away from the other affection. Turn away, turn away, turn away, turn away. And all in this second subject is all about turn away from the false God. Turn to the right God, the only God. Can you see the difference in touch? And how logically, or logically is not the right word really, how imperatively this here, this command of the Christ comes in and says, turn away from the false God. Have but your own, but one affection. Those affections which we have learned in the chapter on prayer, let those be the only. Let those be that which fills our only affection. And let the earth turn away from the others. That's why she starts right away with that statement, thou shalt have no other gods before you. Can you see how the subject just turns, opens up with that sense of the second statement of the commandment, says, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Jesus urged that commandment. See, first again, we have again that activity, that urge in us. We feel the urge in us which says, oh, you can't have both. You have to decide for yourself. Therefore, decide now, turn away from false God, turn to the Spirit. Turn to the Spiritual as the only. And in doing that, we come to Spirit as Spirit, which says, all right, if you turn to the Spiritual, then see that only the Spiritual can enter, that only an inward purification can enter heaven. See, that ritualistic worship, we have here the comparison between ritualistic worship and spiritual worship. Said ritualistic worship doesn't do anything. That self, that sense of the Pharisees, you know, of self-justification, that sense that we think, well, we are good and we are jolly good and we are mighty good and we don't do but good and we are jolly well entitled for heaven, that Pharisaical attitude doesn't bring us anywhere. That only the spiritual can enter heaven. So we have here that the commands of Jesus need really a spiritual and not a ritualistic observance. That these commands to have but one God, that's how it started, you see the urge, thou shalt have no other gods before me, that this is not something which is observed ritualistically, but something which must be in our heart, which is spiritual worship. Then she goes on to the third and says, but that really is something to which you have to stick to. Don't give in anymore. Don't give in anymore. He says, yet he swerved not, well knowing that to obey the divine order and trust God saves retracing and traversing anew the path from sin to holiness. See, it shows in soul we always get very often that sense of perseverance, of sticking through, of holding fast to it. Says therefore here to that sense in us which says, turn to the spiritual, but see that the spiritual is really not something ritualistic, but it is an inward affection which must be cultured. And then it says, "A soul, stay with it, stick to it, don't waver, don't go back, stick to it, stay with it, hold it constant, so to say, in one thought." Jesus was returning blessing for cursing. You see, he didn't waver, he didn't change. It will say, whatever the circumstances were, he didn't change in his worship. He didn't change in holding to the nature of God. He just stuck to the nature of God. He said, it's there where it says that he was despised and rejected of men, but he returned blessing for cursing. He taught mortals the opposite of themselves. See, that's the beautiful thing of this atonement, that we never let go of the unity. Here it's shown the unity with the spiritual, and it says that's our fundamental at one man. Don't let go of it. So don't give in. It says, stay with it, stay with it, stay with the spiritual. And then she goes to principle and gives that sense that material belief is slow to acknowledge what the spiritual fact implies. But the truth is the center to all religion. It commands sure entrance into the whole realm of religion. I feel this passage so important, you see. Again, we come to principle and says it must be a whole realm. It must not be just one example of this turning to the spiritual, to put first things first. But it says, this is a principle which I teach. This, as we would say, to have but one God is a principle which I teach. And that principle implies that we put always first things first, whatever it is. In the whole realm of our life, let's put first things first. See, you see atonement, which comes to us and says, atonement has not to do with imagining and thinking out metaphysics. Atonement has to do with exemplifying what we have seen to be true about metaphysics. Exemplifying it. And here in the second subject says, exemplify that you put first things first wherever you are, whatever you do, whatever is the case. If we do that, if we nurture that, then we support atonement, then we support our unity, then our unity grows stronger and stronger with God. Well, to put first things first is one of the most difficult things for the human. Anyway, it looks deep. See, it has all that to do. You know, there comes a friend from another town and rings up and says, could I see you tonight? And then you think, and one thinks, oh, I haven't seen him, I can't say no. Oh yes, come along. Come along. And you spent the evening talking about the weather and about the Middle East, so on and so on. But how is it if the Christ comes and talks to you and says, have you an evening for me? See, that's putting first things first. And I always feel that this strictness, see, that this discipline, always knowing, without being very pharisaical and very extreme and so on and that, very honest, but to always weigh up our time, our energies, our resources, to weigh up if we use it this way, are we doing something bigger, better? If we are doing that way, are we doing something better or not? That's what the spiritual facts imply. And material belief is slow to acknowledge that. Because material belief takes science and says, yes, the spiritual is the only, the most important. But it is unwilling to draw the conclusion from it and to do what the spiritual facts imply, what the implications of it are. That's where atonement gets in. That's where we feel the cross is coming in. But it isn't a cross. It is really seen the crown, but at first it looks as a cross. It looks as a big decision where we always have to lay down the mortal sense of things, where we give to God what belongs to God, and where we give to Caesar what belongs, where we are slow to acknowledge what the spiritual fact implies because we are very quick in giving to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. But something in us resists to give to God what belongs to God. And if we sidestep that issue, time and time and time again, if we sidestep it, there is no progress in us. We can't progress. It's just not possible. We can go to any amount of talk. It's not possible. It's not life. The law of the textbook says, already in the second chapter, we have to exemplify to that degree which we understand, not more, not less, but to that degree which we are able to understand and which we are able to do. To that extent, we must put our spiritual perception into life and into action and into deeds, or there is no progress. We'll just fail. We will just go on studying and loving talks and loving reading books and articles and so on, but it won't do a thing to our life. Not a thing. That's what spirit, the second subject tells us, as Prince Adam. The moment she says that and says, what are then really these implications? And she says, St. Paul wrote, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. He knew us, which does so easily beset us. And let us run with patience the race that is set before us. That is, let us put aside material self and sin and seek the divine principle and signs of all healing. She comes to life. Life is always, as I said, the focal point in this chapter, always the laying down. Just lay down the burden. Lay down the burden. We can't race if we have a lot of burden on us. But she said, go and race and run with patience the race. Well, if we want to go forward, you see, if we want to progress, then we have to lay down the burden. Which burden? Burden of life. We have to lay down. The burden of life is the burden that life is material. And what that implies, we have to lay down. That we have to lay down all that which tells us that the material life is more important than the spiritual life, that the worldly life is more important than the spiritual life, that business life is more important than the spiritual life, that social life is more important than the spiritual life, that this and that other so-called life is more important than the other, than the spiritual life. That's our burden. And as long as we feel that we want to carry that burden, well, we can carry that burden, but we can't race. Our progress will be slow or none. Will be none or none. The other day I was thinking, what did Mrs. Eddy say there in recapitulation, where she said, how can the student progress most rapidly in Christian Science? And I remember that we were quite satisfied with the first sentence, that we said, study thoroughly the letter and imbibe the spirit. And then we made a full stop. But she goes on and on and on. And what does she go on? See, it's quite right. Study the letter. Without the correct letter, we cannot have the pure spirit. So we must have the correct letter. Then we must have the pondering to get the spirit of that letter, to get the touch of that letter, to get the atmosphere of that letter. But then she goes on and says, adhere to the divine principle of Christian Science and follow the behests of God, abiding steadfastly in wisdom, truth, and love. But these are different things. There comes atonement and Eucharist in and says, adhere to this, abide the behests of God, you see. Follow steadfastly the way of life. You see how all that belongs to our progress and how to progress. And I think for each one of us, it's something we always feel we don't do enough. Which every one of us, I think, feels, well, I relax sometimes and I halt and stall. I should go forward. But the point is that we are with us, honest enough to see that the line of spiritual evolution tells us that unless we do lay aside material self and sense, that we cannot progress. That honesty we should have against ourselves, that we don't fool ourselves, that we are honest and say, well, I'm not willing to do it, so let's go and go fishing and have a jolly good time. Then to fool ourselves and think, it's quite enough if I think right. It's not enough. That's prayer. Then comes the doing. Go and do it. And so then she comes and says, if you have laid your burden aside, then she comes to truth. And then the thing always clears up. Then the solution comes in. She says, if truth is overcoming error in your daily walk and conversation, you can finally say, I have fought a good fight. I have overcome. I have kept faith because you are a better man. You see, the moment you come to truth, you always come to man. Just as in mind of truth, you came to man. Man does the will of wisdom. Here, in spirit, you are a better man. Can you see the exactness of the tone? And it shows to become a better man, as we like to become, that is the outcome in the sixth day of five preceding days, of five preceding states. That it isn't wishful thinking which does it, but that it is the atoning step by step through the first five by laying down the false man, that we have the better man. And then, naturally, when we have that, then she comes to love, and then she says, well, then you will finish your course with joy. See, then you have the crown of rejoicing. Then that Eucharist becomes the well rejoicing. Says if the disciple, see, it's a disciple, it's no more just anybody. It's a disciple, and disciple is somebody who is willing to follow a principle and a science. If the disciple is advancing spiritually, he's striving to enter in. See, he constantly turns away and gets a tone of spirit. You see, he constantly turns away from material sense and looks towards. You have here, can just imagine Noah sitting in his ark and just have one little window in the top, which goes always outward and upward, just looking always towards the imperishable things of spirit. If honest, he will be in earnest from the start, and gain a little each day in the right direction, till at last he finishes his course with joy. See the fulfillment of it. Fulfillment of that one process that goes right through that second subject of turning away from material sense and always looking towards the imperishable things of spirit. If that is fulfilled, first as an active command, mind, then second comes that it is something which must be fulfilled, not ritualistic, but inwardly in your heart, with your spiritual inward worship. Third, by sticking to it and not going back, by having that perseverance of soul and sticking to it. Fourthly, by taking that standpoint in every case, not in one case, but in every case, because principle implies all ideas in every case. Then doing it by laying down the mortal sense of oneself, laying down the burden of life, burden of mortal life, that brings us to a better consciousness, to a better man. And that ends, that finishes the course with joy. No more with bitterness, with joy. Well, it's 7 o'clock. If anybody has to leave, I would like that they feel free to go out. Perhaps somebody is waiting outside. And for the rest, I like to go on for about 10 minutes. So don't feel free to go out. I think the point which I want to make clear here is a very comforting point too. And I had it in the questionnaire. To see that this process is a step-by-step process. That atonement isn't something cruel with the human. It isn't cruel towards the human. It's gentle and understanding with the human. It doesn't, though it presents the proposition to have but one God and to serve but one God, it doesn't ask it to do it at once and holy, because we wouldn't be able to do it. But it's the gentleness which says, do it step by step the best you can. And perhaps you have seen how she pointed out that. First she pointed out that Jesus paid first to God, gave honor to God, what honors God, but also to Caesar, what belongs to Caesar. And then she says, but at last he paid no homage to the doctrines of, and theories of men. See, at last. He shows that even Jesus, as our exemplar, shows that he had to give himself time to do it, to work out this oneness of being step by step. First, as we should do it, by giving to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. Only the very neophyte wants to take away from Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and he goes into extreme, and it doesn't do any good. Then, she says, and be clear that even the harlot and the publicans go into heaven before the hypocrites and the Pharisees. That self-justification and self-righteousness is the hardest thing to yield. That there are steps and stages in our character which yield quicker than other points, than other characteristics in us. So that we have patience with us and see that some points in us yield quicker and others not so quick. Then she says, there is a path to be trodden from sin to holiness. There is no jumping. There is no jumping into heaven. See, she is quite down to earth with us. She says that material belief is slow to acknowledge. She knows it, that it is slow. Therefore, she says, let us run with patience the race. It is as if that would be a contradiction. If you run, you don't have patience. You have to be quick. But spiritually seen, it's so true. We must have that sense of life which is just going on. Life just can't be stopped. Nothing can stop life. Life is God. Life just takes us on and on and on. We just can't say stop. Just 1 second comes to the next and drives on. But let's go that race with patience with ourselves. If we are not patient with ourselves, it gives friction in ourselves. And that doesn't make the case better. And she says, overcome error daily. When truth is overcoming error in your daily walk and conversation. See, it's daily, day after day. And then, in love, she says, gaining a little each day in the right direction, that will do it. That will do it. Gaining every day a little bit and a little bit, it's the constancy of the effort that will do it. That will finish the job. Till at last, we finish the course with joy. So, I like to point out these things because I think we all like so-called instantaneous demonstrations. I think we all like it, but I have very seldom found somebody who likes instantaneous laying down of the mortal. I haven't found those yet. So we would like to have the one without the other, really, you see. And if we would be willing instantaneously to lay down all, we would, the false sense, naturally, we would have instantaneous heaven. But she shows and says, be reasonable about these things. Jesus gave him 30 years of time to do it. Let's give us also time to do it. But she doesn't leave it at that. She says, what is the method of doing? And the method of doing is to do it always a little bit, always a little bit, as far as we understand it, as far as we understand. It doesn't ask more than what we understand and what we can. But usually we can do much more than what we do. That's usually the point. So you can see here how spirit here is represented in the tone of the word as the Christ spirit. Spirit as the Christ which comes to the human and says, I am the only, therefore as the Christ I ask you to accept only one thing, to turn away from false gods, false intentions, false motives, false worship, false ambition. Turn away from that. Turn to me, to spirit. Look to the imperishable things of spirit. Day in, day out, every day a little, every day a little. And that helps us to raise the course. That's the quickest way. And that will give us a chance to finish the course with joy. Well, I don't want to go further and longer on that subject. Tomorrow we will meet at the ordinary time. What is it? Half past ten. And we will go on with the third subject.